This is LOA Today, the Law of Attraction Show. Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Piesine here along with my brother Mark, my sister-in-law Yuona, and today is April 30th, 2015. Today we're going to talk about something that the three of us agree probably happens to most people in life. They do work usually a job, usually a 9-to-5. Sometimes they're doing multiple jobs that they don't really love. And yet there are at least a small minority of us who are trying to apply the law of attraction. And ideally, we want to try to apply it in the things that we're doing every day. Well, what do you do if you don't love your job? According to most of the people who preach positive thinking or the law of attraction or whatever, the answer is you try to find things about your job that you do love, and you try to focus on those, and you try to get yourself into a frame of mind that says, I love what I'm doing as much as you can. And that's the challenge, because many of us have a hard time doing that because, well, we're just not necessarily doing something we love. So that seemed like a good topic. I suspect we could probably spend an hour on that. What do you guys think?
Yeah,
I think so.
So I guess what I should start this off with is by saying that last week, of course, we had this really great show where we just did positives, one full hour of positives. And we should pat ourselves on the back that we managed to tell all positive stories for 60 minutes. That was a good thing.
Yes.
Now, to follow up on the stories, immediately after we filmed, or not filmed, but recorded last week's show, and we record these shows usually a week in advance, but the day after that we recorded the show, I had gone from what was probably one of my best weeks of the year to one of my worst days of the year in 24 hours.
Whoa.
Which was a really dramatic shift, shall we say. And without going into too much detail, people know that I do online marketing and I host websites, I design websites. And just to cut to the quick, one of my customers uploaded a plugin to their WordPress website that basically had this huge vulnerability and let a bunch of hackers into the server. So not a happy situation. And in the course of pulling my hair out and trying to figure out how to get this thing fixed in as short a period of time as possible, which, by the way, I did with minimal fallout. I'm wow. very proud of that.
Congratulations.
Wow.
Yeah. I had one other customer only call to complain that they couldn't send emails. Because the problem is when something like this happens, you end up getting blacklisted so that you can't send emails to almost any other server around the planet. And I managed to have only one customer complain, which was phenomenal.
Okay.
Wow.
And even then, when I explained to them what was going on, their reaction was, oh, good, we thought it was something we did. So all in all, it was a very, very positive result, which I attribute in part to the fact that we did the show last week, that you know we were talking about positives. We've been on this positive train for quite some time. So overall, I was in a good frame of mind leading up to it. But I have to also say it was pretty tough. It was pretty challenging getting through it. I was quite upset a few times. I actually chewed out the customer, rightfully so. Well, I wasn't screaming at them or anything like that, but I put them on the carpet for saying, you know, for doing something that was really dumb. And the reason I was able to do that with a very high degree of accuracy, shall we say, is that not only was I 100% sure what account the problem had occurred in, because you know the logs show it, but the people who did this were a group of private investigators.
Yeah.
And you would think that private investigators would know the importance of actually doing their homework to check things out to see if they're safe.
Right.
If they had, they would have discovered that there were news reports last week about this particular plugin that they plugged in, saying that there was this huge vulnerability that hackers had actually hacked into. But no, they didn't do their homework. So, yeah, that's why I called them on the carpet.
Yeah.
Interesting side story out of this, by the way, is that they tried to blame me for it.
Oh, wow.
That was interesting, too. And I have to say that all the work I've been doing lately on positivity and the show we did and so forth helped me very much in that situation, because I just brushed it aside.
Uh-huh.
I didn't let it bother me, and that was really a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a very good thing.
That's a big...
I also basically counterattacked saying, no, it was you, and that just ended it. But the bottom line is that it was a tough weekend. It was a very painful weekend. And the only good news is that it happened on a Friday leading into a weekend, which meant I basically had 3 days to get the thing cleaned up before Monday came along. And that's why my customers weren't inconvenienced, because, of course, their business is working Monday through Friday.
Right.
So that's how it all shook out. So there is an example of not enjoying the work very much. It was not fun at all. I tried to look at, you know, I did my job well. I tried to look at it that all's well that ends well. But you know what? It wasn't fun.
Yeah, I'm sure. That doesn't sound like fun at all.
No, no. And it led to a question in my mind. And that question is, when things aren't going right and your job isn't fun, how do you make it fun? How do you get onto that positive plane at the time you most need to? I think overall I did a pretty good job. I didn't overreact. I didn't go diving off the deep end. I didn't go into a negative tailspin. But I was getting buffeted really badly. I mean, I was like on the high seas and the waves were reaching 50 feet. It was not fun.
Yeah.
How do you get yourself into a positive frame of mind? I guess part of the answer is, to a certain extent, I did.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think, you know, even though we're talking about job specifically, the solution is actually a general one, because it's not just our job that might be something we, you know, not want to do or wish were different. That, you know, there's so much of our lives.
It could be something at home, you know.
Yeah.
It could be something that you're on a volunteer basis, you're doing outside of work, you know.
Or it could be your whole, like, you know, there could be some stay-at-home moms do things, you know, it's not all fun and games. They don't like things that they're doing. Or, like as you said, it could be a chore that you have to get done, and you just, you know, it's something you have to do, but it's not your favorite thing to do.
Unfortunately, most of the time, it's not a major crisis like this was.
Right.
Most of the time, it's minor stuff.
Yes.
Minor stuff that annoys us and gnaws at us and gets, you know, it's like this chronic pain that never goes away.
Right, yeah, because a lot of times it's routine stuff that
needs
to be things that you don't enjoy doing. But it's kind of, you know, fits in with the theme that we've been talking about all the time. Just like you always say, you know, find a way to feel good. It's the same with these kinds of issues. You have to find something that you like about what it is. As small and as minute as it might be, you have to shift your focus there. You have to find something that actually, because, you know, when we get into that rut, of course, we only see and we emphasize and we focus on the aspect of the job that we detest. And so then that part of it grows and it seems as if that's all there is to it. But I believe that every situation, every job, every chore, every activity, no matter how unpleasant, there is somewhere deep within that thing, there's something about it that you might actually find rewarding and enjoyable, some aspect of it that you can find. It might be challenging because, you know, we spend most of our lives focusing on things we don't want to do and why we don't want to do it and how miserable it makes us feel. But in all of those things, there might be something that, you know, we can say, well, I don't like my job, but, you know, I have my computer works well.
I was doing stuff like that, actually, trying to focus on the incidentals.
Right.
And I also saw it as an opportunity. It was an opportunity in the face of an overwhelmingly bad situation to be positive. I mean, that's not easy to do under any circumstance, but especially hard to do when the world is throwing the negativity at you. I mean, talk about the ultimate opportunity to not accept the so-called reality of the physical world and to impose the true reality that starts in your own imagination upon that world. That's the opportunity for it. And it's hard. It's hard when reality, as we know it in the physical world, is throwing everything it's got at you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the amazing thing is that just listening to your experience, you know, you have been really doing such a great job of, you know, staying positive and finding the positive and focusing on feeling good. And it's almost as if you're part of this training or boot camp, and suddenly the universe did just up the ante. Like, okay, you've passed that level. Now we have to take you higher.
It felt a lot like that. It really did. In fact, there were times where I was noticing the absurdity of the situation.
Exactly. Yes, that is good. That is when you know that you're actually, you know, conquering this whole law of attraction, staying positive, overcoming the reality kind of thing, is when you actually can see how absurd it is.
Yeah. At one point, I can recall, I'm sitting there after getting off a phone call with that customer, and you know how it is whenever you have to confront somebody and it's unpleasant. Mm-hmm. You have that, you know, sort of a tingly sensation, and you're kind of jittery and eyed edge and so forth.
Yes.
And just at that moment, as I was sitting there kind of trying to recover from the call, one of the cats jumps up on the table and starts, you know, clamoring for attention. And that's when the absurdity kicked in, because here was an opportunity to love and be loved and so on and so forth in the midst of this insanity.
Right.
That was quite absurd.
Yeah, because, you know, you have to find a way to not get sucked in, to not get drawn in.
Right.
You know, because that's the job of the ego, always.
And in fact, that's what happened. What happened was, in the midst of the craziness, the universe found ways to deliver positives to me.
Mm,
it was basically offering me, well, here's a way you could distract your attention.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the universe always does that. We're not always aware of it, but I would lay my life down. The universe always does that. Always, always, always. Guaranteed. We just have to be better attuned to seeing those signals, to getting those messages from the universe, to know, okay, yeah, this is going crazy and I can't handle it, and it's like everything's falling apart, but here's something that I can actually feel good about in this whole situation.
And it has fur and it's soft.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you pay attention to the message, then you're reminded that, oh, this is just an experience, and it can depend upon how I approach it. It mm-hmm. doesn't have to be negative.
Yes.
Now, it did occur to me during all this, including the more absurd periods, to suggest to the universe, okay, thank you for saying this my way, but this isn't really what I had in mind.
Yeah.
I had something more positive and more better feeling in mind, okay?
Yes. But, you know, that's what's going to happen, though. The deeper we get into the practice of LOA, I think the more difficult the challenges are going to come that's going to face us. But the good part of it is that with the more difficult challenges, when we do overcome them, we can celebrate that. We can say, you know what, I was able to stay positive. I was able to actually look at the big picture, not just through this circumstance that I can deal with or I don't mind, but through this thing that I really would have wished never happened, you know? So,
right. You know, it literally makes you stronger.
It does.
You actually improve.
Yes.
For the good. I mean, for permanently, if you will.
Yes.
You generally don't slide back after you make these improvements, so that the next time a similar situation comes up, it's not as big of a deal.
Exactly. It's like when, you know, when I was training for the marathon for the first time, and I'd never run, you know, 26.2 miles, I had to start with running 5 miles, and then I would challenge myself to run 8 miles and then 12 miles, and you know, every time you run 5 miles for a while, for a week or two, and then the next week you say, okay, I'm going to do 8 miles. And when you get to that fifth mile, your body is screaming, okay, this is enough. Quit, stop the madness, you know? But you have to push through that, because you know when you face those bigger challenges, you get better and stronger. And so when you go on and run 8 miles, 5 miles becomes nothing. That's like a piece of cake. And it's the same when you go to the 12th mile and then finally, you know, 18, 20, whatever. So after you face those bigger challenges, the easier ones are nothing. You're like, I can breeze through that, you know, so, but you do feel stronger. You feel stronger, you know, in terms of your stamina and your ability to face not just the challenge of running, but you get stronger emotionally, because now you think, okay, I can actually, survive some things that I don't, you know, like when I'm studying for hours or whatever the case may be, you know, that as we heard in that tape, that reference point that I have, I can now use when other situations come up.
And in fact, you kind of skated over it, but you've already managed to basically square away and put aside to the point where you don't think anymore the very beginnings of when you were running.
Yes.
Because you start off with the idea of, well, you know, I could do 5 miles. But I bet you when you first started, your first attempt was maybe a half a mile.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But so, you kept pushing through and you kept working and stretching it out until you got to the point where 5 miles was a piece of cake, whereas at the first day, 5 miles would have been impossible.
Exactly. Exactly so. And so that's what we have to think about when on the other side of those challenges, that we're going to be stronger, better, more able to, you know, deal with whatever life, the universe, God, whomever throws at us.
And in fact, what we're really trying to do here is we're trying to get to the point where when the crisis hits, we're indifferent to the crisis. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily to the circumstances, because circumstances, obviously, you know, we want certain outcomes to happen, but the crisis itself,
yes,
we want to be indifferent to that so that it's just water off the duck's back, as the old cliche goes.
Yeah.
Right.
In fact,
right.
You want to get to that place, you know, that Dr. Deepak Chopra talks about. He says he actually looks forward to these challenges. You know, it's like he wakes up in the morning and he's like, okay, you know, what interesting, unpredictable, unexpected thing is going to happen to me? Because he knows it is going to happen. That's life. But now he just, instead of shying away from it or hoping that it doesn't happen, he's like, bring it on, I'm ready.
Wow.
So
I would think that an even more desirable posture would be, I don't really care about those.
Mm-hmm.
The things that I care about have nothing to do with crises.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he's come to the place where he doesn't see them as crises. For him, he describes it as the potpourri that makes life the diverse and interesting. Because if the same thing happened every day, then it would be quite boring. So for him, it's part of the excitement of life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Well, I wish him a very exciting life.
Yeah, part of the challenge, I guess, is when something unexpected does happen, the shock of the unexpectedness is something, again, that you can train yourself to
not have that response.
Yeah.
You know, to have a completely different response. That's the ultimate goal, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because we cannot eradicate these situations from our lives, but we can get to the place where we don't see them as negative or difficult or things we should try to avoid, but more so as, oh, okay, that happened. Oh, I see. Okay, here's how I'm going to deal with it. I see what the universe is trying to do here.
Or even if you don't see what the universe is trying to do here. I'm not even so sure it's a question of trying to eradicate them or whatever. I think it's just a question of getting to the point where they're just not interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where you know, they just don't faze you because they really don't. You really don't want to give any attention to them because you have no reason to. I mean, ultimately, what we want to do is we want to get ourselves to the point where we feel like anything that happens is something, well, let's put it this way. Anything good that happens is stuff that we're trying to attract. Anything that bad that happens, it doesn't last very long, and we're on to the next thing anyway. So the now is constantly shifting into the good zone. That's to me, is the ultimate place to be in.
Okay.
But I think there's something to be said about – you know, because Mark and I have talked about this, that there's a duality of life that we have to accept. There is going to be the light and the darkness. There's going to be the celebrations and the, you know, whatever, you know, and it's part of the whole human experience. I think when you get to the place where you're not attached to any of it and you don't have all these emotional responses, you know, I remember, what's his name? Eckhart Tolle in his, you know, in one of his interviews with Oprah, he talked about how, you know, he sees these things as part of life, you know, when something great happens and he's celebrating and he's having a good time, or something that is challenging that, you know, may not have been his personal choice for the way things are going, but he has learned to have zero attachment to any of it, the happy times as well as the not so happy times. It's like they come, they go, and they just kind of pass on with time.
Right. And I think part of that zero attachment isn't interpreted as numbness or something. It's a feeling of peace and a different kind of happiness, I should say.
Yes.
Not an earthly derived happiness, but a
yeah, he does actually use the word peace, and he also quotes the Bible verse that says, "This too shall pass." That's one of his famous, he loves quoting that text. The good times, he says, this too shall pass. The bad times, this too shall pass. It's come to pass.
It's come to pass.
I have to say, that doesn't really attract me.
Yeah?
No. I suppose part of it has to do with how we define attachment. But to me, the idea of not attaching at all to the good times is ridiculous. I mean, what's the point of having good times if you're not going to enjoy them? That's what attaching is. You're enjoying it.
Well, that's not what attaching is. That's completely different.
All right. Then, like I say, it comes down to what your definition of attachment is. So let's define attachment.
Yes. Attachment is when you are living for the good times and you want only the good times and you feel that life should only be about the good times. And when the good time comes, you're so desperately attached to it. You're afraid that it's going to go away and it's going to come to an end. And so you're so absorbed in holding onto that good times that you're not really, really enjoying it, because all you're thinking about, oh my goodness, is this going to stay or is this going to last? And so you're so wrapped up in that, whether it's here to stay or not, you're not really, you know, you can enjoy it without being attached to it.
So attachment in this case is really another word for fear of loss. Yeah,
maybe. I guess the way I think of it is placing a lot of importance on either on the good times or the bad times.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, we could not place time. We could choose not to place emphasis on the good times at all. But at some point, I have to ask, where does the enjoyment of living kick in? If it's not through attachment, where does it kick in?
He enjoys life every day, and that's that's what he and both Eckhart and Deepak Chopra talks about. You know, they enjoy the good times, and they even
enjoy the bad times. That's true.
I don't see it that way. I mean, maybe it's because I see a world of people living with tons of bad times and not so much good times. Maybe it's because I that's what I've seen a lot of in my life. And you don't have to go far to spot it. It's not like you have to invent it.
Right.
Yeah. So to me, there's a tremendous imbalance there, and the fact that people spend so much time living in so much negativity. I mean, we could argue that there's a balance of that the light and the dark thing. There's a balance of the negativity and the positive anyway. Just which ones are you happen to pay more attention to? But when I see the volume of the negativity, and I see how much time people spend on it. most often because their circumstances drive it, and very few of us are really strong at being able to dictate our own reality in our own minds.
Or believe that's even possible.
Or even believe it's possible. In combination with the lack of attention to the positive stuff that goes on, it makes me wonder, at what point does it counterbalance? At what point do we swing around so that the opposite is true? Because supposedly all this is, you know, it's a yin-yang, right? It's like a pendulum going on.
Well,
when does the pendulum swing back? And when it swings back, is it too much to say that it flows into a zone where more of the things going on are positive and fewer are negative? Because that's what it sounds like to me. It sounds to me that Deepak Chopra and the other gurus we're referring to here are all saying it's both, and you want both at all times.
No, it's not necessarily.
There's two. Remember, there's two levels we're talking about here. There's the world itself. There's just the nature of the world, nature included. And that's where the yin-yang is. That's where the balance occurs. That's where the opposites occur. And then there's the other level, which is our relationship to it, our perspective, our approach to it.
Okay.
And that's the separate part, if you will. That's the part we have control over. And that's where we can either be lost in the tragedy of the world, like most people are, and they just suffer, and it's a relentless suffering through much of their lives. And that's taking the negative approach, if you will. Or you can take the other approach, which is, oh, you know what? This life is not the end. It's not, again, I go back to the words important and serious. And you can start changing your perspective, start changing your attitude. And of course, it does require faith and belief in something, whether it's LOA or God or whatever, something, or your imagination, or your ability to actually have an influence in your experience in the world around you.
Yeah, it's about enjoying the journey, even when there are rough patches, or, you know, quote unquote, however we describe it, because, you know, for those guys, you know, I'm not there, but for them, every day is wonderful, every single day, regardless of what happens.
So the yin and yang aspect, the duality aspect, isn't automatic in your perspective. It's just automatic in the physical universe, you know, sort of running mechanically, if you will.
So when they're talking about enjoying the good times and enjoying the bad times in equal measure, they're not really talking about enjoying them within the reality. They're talking about enjoying them from this outside spiritual perspective, where we think our own reality and we don't worry about the physical reality.
Exactly. Yes.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, the first time I heard or read the whole concept, I thought, that's, you know, because we both read that statement from Dr. Chopra where he said that, you know, he wakes up every morning in anticipation of the diversity of life and experiences.
Right.
Yes,
right.
And you know, whatever it comes, you know, he actually looks forward to that. And I thought, wow, that's different.
Yeah. What a powerful place to be.
I know.
I'm striving for that, by the way. I'm not always, in fact, I'm rarely there, but I believe it, and I believe I'm working toward that and making progress toward that.
I'm not there either, so I think all three of us are perhaps in one sense disqualified from having an opinion about it, but I'm going to utter an opinion anyway, because that's what I do. It's my lot in life to express opinions.
Of course. We all do, of course.
And I guess from my perspective, when you get to that place where you're feeling so strong, you're feeling strong enough that you do control your own reality. You know that what you think is what actually draws more stuff into your life, and you do that on a regular basis, and you've got so much abundance and so much good going on that, you know, from that perspective, it's easy to look at the positives and negatives, the yin and yang of everyday physical life, and not be affected strongly by one or the other. I can see how that can happen. Mm-hmm. But.
But? I knew there was a but coming.
There is a but coming. And the but is, I think it's a missed opportunity.
To?
Well, the most common line that we hear from the gurus is that we're here to experience the diversity. Mm-hmm. I suggest we're here for more than that.
Okay.
I suggest that we're here not just for the diversity, but for experiencing that part of the diversity we most want to experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can go along with that.
And therefore valuing the different aspects of the diversity differently. So now all of a sudden, having equal amounts of acceptance or indifference of both sides of the yin and yang becomes not quite so balanced.
Right, right. Because we also believe that we can affect our reality around us, to use that word again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's part of the experience as well. That's part of the learning process and the self-development, and, you know, a purpose on earth and all that.
And it's also about what we choose to think that we want to try to attract. Because what we want to try to attract is reflective of how we want the physical experience to play out.
Yeah, but I think here that, you know, as you said, we are not qualified to express an opinion. I think, you know, listening to you talking, what I hear is still so much fear of those negative experiences.
Well, if that's what you're hearing, then I'm expressing it wrong. tell you what, we're past time for a break. Let's take a break. After the break, I'm going to try to give you a little more of a detailed explanation of what it is that I'm feeling as I'm talking about what I'm talking about here. Okay?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. This is LOA Today here on PRN. We'll be back after these messages.
Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof.
Welcome back to LOA Today. Walt, Ilona, and Mark on this Thursday, April 30th, 2015, talking about life, the universe, and everything, and more specifically, talking about how we interact with life, how we interact with the yin and yang of daily physical existence, how we choose what we're going to attract into our lives on a daily basis, and how all this plays out in terms of what we experience and how we choose to experience it. If that doesn't totally confuse you, then continue listening, because we're going to have another 25 minutes of good show here. So, Mark, you were saying something during the break. Why don't you kind of reiterate what you were saying during the break?
Yes, I didn't mean to exclude the part of our experience in life, which is to influence the world around us. That is definitely a part of our reason for being here, and one of the greatest joys of being here, because it's so exciting to be able to do that. And I'm sure we could take off on a whole direction there of all these famous people who have done amazing things with their lives. And if you talk to these people, they tell you that, yeah, they just want to do more and more, and they just want to change the world and make more money and influence and power and everything else. And that's partly why we're here. Absolutely. I guess the whole reason we were talking about the yin and the yang, the duality of life and how to deal with it, which is basically to accept it as it is, not take it too seriously, is because we don't control every iota, I suppose, until mm-hmm. we become God, right? And so surprises happen.
Yes.
You know, things happen. And I think that's a constant in life. Now, maybe it's not constant. Maybe that's partly what you're arguing, and that could be. I really don't know. But I think it does continue in some way, plus or minus, growing or decreasing.
Yeah, and I feel like the only thing we have complete 100% control of is our response.
Right, right. And that's what we're talking. That's what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Not to mean that that's all there is to deal with life, you know.
Yeah. And when you've mastered the response, where your response is the response you want to have, that's when I think life becomes fun regardless of what happens.
Right, and right.
And I think that there's validity to what you're saying, but I think there's more. And the more is where I think I was losing you. Where you were thinking I was falling into a fear zone, but it's not really the way I was thinking it. Because you pointed out just now that the only thing we really control is our response. And I disagree. I think there's one other thing we control. We control our ability to initiate. It isn't all about responding about what happens out there and how we're going to respond to it. It's also how we initiate. Because it's the initiation where we actually do our creation. Response is simply how we're going to react to what's happening around us. But what we initiate is where we create.
True. But what I'm saying is that we have control of what we initiate. But, you know, we live on a planet with other people. And my thing is that when I came to understand that, you know, there's the yin and the yang, you know, and again, I related back to exercise, you know, there's some exercise I do that is like, oh my God, it's painful. It's not fun. It hurts. I don't want to do it. But I know on the other end, there are some benefits to it. So just like you were saying, there are things that we may initiate ourselves, even the things that we may not like on a conscious level, but on some level we have attracted it into our lives for whatever reason. And I think for me, the reason is because we want to grow, to overcome, to enjoy what comes on the other side of that experience. And so I don't see it as being the goal of getting to that place where it's all only the good quote unquote experiences.
Yeah, I don't think it's all about getting good experiences, but I do think it's all about feeling joyful all the time.
Yes, and I think those gurus have mastered feeling joyful in those what we would consider not so good times. I think they do.
I suspect that they do. I just don't want to necessarily draw a connection that says the joy happens because of the negativity.
No. That's not what we're saying.
Or that they're enjoying the negativity.
No, neither. Well, I don't know. Maybe about that. But I mean, what we're saying is, in spite of the negativity, they're enjoying themselves.
Yes, they can look beyond the negative experience and look at the big picture and see how their soul is growing as a result of it. Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That makes more sense to me. The problem that I have with the teaching that says that they enjoy the bad stuff as well as they enjoy the good stuff skips a very important point, which is they're not really enjoying the bad. It's not like they're cheering that somebody got hurt. It's not like they're excited that something really horrible happened.
Right, that's
right,
true.
No, we're not saying that.
But that's the way it can come across.
Right, true. But what I was saying is like in exercise, you know, when I'm exercising, there are times when I'm exercising and my chest burns, my leg hurts, my muscles ache, but I'm enjoying it. You know what I mean?
And you don't even have to go through that level of pain in order to reach enjoyment, but you choose to in your case.
Exactly.
Because of what it means.
Right. Well, what I know, what happens to me as a result of it. And so I enjoy the exercise times even when it's not, you know, I mean, I wish I could exercise without the pain, but it's like, okay, hey, that's what it is. But you know what? I realized too that there's a part of it that is almost necessary. You know, it's like what we do, there's a form of exercise called a high intensity interval training. And that it builds your cardio like none other. And you only know when you're doing it right is when you're burning. But what it means is like now you've actually exhausted the supply of oxygen to your lungs. And so you're feeling that. Now, when that happens, the next time you breathe, your lungs get a little stronger. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
a little more resilient.
Strength from adversity is basically what that is.
Yeah, and so, you know, at that instant, it's like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Why do I do this to myself?
Which is a very intelligent question to ask, I might add.
But let me tell you, after you've done that, you feel so amazingly powerful. And you know that your body's changing. You know that it's getting stronger and you're getting healthier. So, yeah, you do it.
Well, maybe you do. I don't. I mean, when I do exercise and I'm feeling sore because of the exercise, the soreness is the last thing that I think about. It's not like I embrace the soreness and say, oh, God, I got to really make the soreness feel sore so that I can be even stronger afterward. No, that's the way I'm looking at it at all.
No, that's not the way I look at it either. It's just that we're discussing that aspect of it now. I don't talk about that at all. You know, I'm just saying that that's part of it. You know, there's all the other parts of it, which is fun and exciting and enjoyable, you know, but I'm saying that there are those aspects of it, which if I were to focus only on that, I wouldn't do it.
Okay. Well, we'll have to delve into the psychology of that at a future date, I think.
Okay.
Maybe we'll bring some athletes onto the show.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, to me, it's the more important thing is focusing on the part, to borrow the old phrase, talking about what we're really talking about. Instead of talking about the peripheral stuff and treating the peripheral stuff as if that were the end-all be-all, how about talking about what we really talk about?
Well, the whole reason why we're bringing that up is because that's the topic of the show. The show is how do you deal with something you don't like? And things we don't like include, you know, uncomfortable experiences, such as physically stressful experiences. That's a classic example.
So one way that you've addressed of dealing with those is to embrace them to the point of you know, the breaking point and to burst through and to feel stronger afterward. Okay, that's one way to look at it. That's one way to deal with them. Let's see perhaps if there's another way to deal with them. For instance, how about the idea of you're dealing with a stressful situation, some kind of difficult situation, something you don't enjoy doing, and you decide you're going to find something to feel good about anyway just to distract yourself from the part that you don't like. And you keep focusing that way more and more until it becomes your dominant thought pattern. And in the process of it becoming your dominant thought pattern, the part that was negative, the part that was difficult, the part that was overwhelming, the part that you didn't like at all, becomes less and less part of your attention. Yeah. Doesn't that actually get us to the same place?
So I think you're misunderstanding something very important.
Okay.
That was not a strategy. That was not a strategy that we were admonishing. That I was just describing what it's like when I exercise at some instances.
Okay.
But certainly when I exercise, I listen to music I love and enjoy, and I look forward to listening to that music and exercising to the music. And I'm saying that, you know, when I exercise, it's different from taking a stroll along the lake. You know what I mean? it's a different experience, you know, and there are aspects of it that are uncomfortable and even sometimes distressing, but I still do that by embracing what happens, what I know is happening as a result. But like you mentioned, I do listen to music or find other ways to distract myself. Sometimes I exercise by watching tennis, which is one of my guilty pleasures in life, you know?
Guilty?
Yes.
I didn't know you could feel guilty about watching tennis. Is this like a, you know, a religious thing? Is this like a school stricture? You will not watch tennis. You will never watch tennis.
You don't understand how much tennis I watch.
Oh, I see. Okay. No. So you're a tennis addict. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
I follow all the tournaments and the players. I know the stats. I have. Yeah, it's pretty involved.
So you watch stand before a group of people and say, my name is Yuona and I'm a tennisaholic.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yep. Mark can testify.
I can attest to it.
I think it's actually called being a fan.
Well, this goes beyond.
She is a fan. She's a super fan.
Well, the word fan does come from the word fanatic.
Yes, oh, exactly. True. Yeah. Yes, it's a kind of an extension of that.
It's kind of like me during March.
I've woken up at 3 o'clock in the morning to watch a match at Wimbledon and stuff like that.
Like in Australia or something, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, it's like me in March. Don't ever come to me in March and say that any team is going to beat UConn.
Oh, really? Oh,
wow. It's not going to happen in my mind.
I didn't know you were such a fan.
I am a UConn fan. Go Huskies.
Yeah, wow, oh. Okay. I learned something about you.
Of course, the good news is that I don't get that fanatic throughout the rest of the year. So I don't have to go to Huskyholic Anonymous.
Ah, okay. Yeah, mine is pretty year-round, unfortunately.
Yes, tennis never seems to end.
It's... I know, and it's just more tournaments getting started every day. But like you were saying, Walt, it is that's one of the methods I use to distract myself, basically, when I'm exercising, so...
What method do you use to distract yourself from watching tennis?
Oh, God.
Well, that's different. That's an addiction, not a chore that you have to do.
Right, you know? I know.
What's the difference? It's basically you find yourself doing something that you wish you would do less often. Does it really matter that you enjoy it more?
Yeah, I think it's a difference. Enjoying something you don't want to do, but I don't know.
I mean, either you feel that it's perfectly fine to be spending that time doing it, which is a perfectly legitimate conclusion to come to because you're here to live your life,
yeah.
Or you feel you're overdoing it, in which case you feel a need to back off from it.
Right.
Right. Yep, that's it.
And so I balance it by getting work done while I'm watching tennis.
That's true. You do that.
You're like Louise. She can justify watching TV in 1,000 different ways. As long as she's getting something done, it's okay to be sitting watching TV.
Tennis. Be specific now.
Specifically, well, in your case, it's tennis. With her, it's the stuff that she watches.
Oh, you're talking about Louise. Oh, sorry.
It's auction hunters or whatever it might be, you know.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, I...
Though sometimes her tennis addiction does interfere with her sleep schedule. You know, to the detriment of our family life.
Well, it's not my fault they have tournaments all over the world at weird times.
I have one word for you, TiVo.
Oh, because I watch it online. You remember we don't have a TV?
Yeah, but you can record it. So you have to watch it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, but if it's the finals of the Wimbledon Championship, I just watch a recording of that.
Spoken like a true fanatic.
Okay, so where are we?
We just distracted ourselves from talking about a topic I guess we didn't like talking about.
Did we have a topic? Yeah, the topic was how do you deal with a job that you don't enjoy doing?
Right, oh, right, distract right. Yourself.
That's right.
And talk about something else.
Right.
I think we have actually demonstrated how to distract yourself.
We have successfully demonstrated.
Now, whether or not people will be able to apply this while they're doing their job and actually get their job done is another question.
Yes.
we did our part.
Well, surely there are other ways.
There are. And toward that goal, I actually wanted to outline one that I've been trying to apply this week.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause, of course... Last week's show, I talked about how I had this influx of work that was coming in at the very last minute. But it was here. It was arriving.
Yeah.
And it was basically staving off a disaster and turning things into potentially very good direction. And that trend continues, which is a good thing. Sure. Of course, that means you actually have to do the work. You know, once the work comes in, you actually have to do it so you can earn the money. But...
So
that's what I've been doing, plowing through the work that has come through. And in the course of doing so, that's where I was starting to refocus on the same question again. Because a lot of the stuff that I do is stuff that I'm bored with or I just don't want to have to do anymore, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I actually decided to do something kind of novel for me, and it fits right into what we've been talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
I decided that somehow, some way, I was going to like it.
Oh, what a concept.
Which really flies in the face of everything I've done most of my life with the work that I've done that I haven't really enjoyed very much. Like, all of a sudden, I'm going to like it.
Yes.
It's almost like the parent who sits you down. You're going to eat your spinach and you're going to like it. Okay. And that usually backfires. But it's a completely different category of thing, a different flavor of thing, a different texture of thing when you impose it upon yourself.
Yes, it does make a difference.
It makes a huge difference. It's dynamically different.
And you got to first believe it's possible.
Which is the biggest step of all.
Right.
Just believing that it's possible.
Yes, and you know what? It actually is. I have tried it, and it works.
Can you relate a story, an experience?
That's not related to tennis?
No. When I, you know, like my schoolwork, you know, I think about when I have to write these papers, these 10 or 20 page papers or something, you know. And, you know, I can write about a topic I enjoy unless I have to write about a topic that I enjoy. And so I found ways to enjoy it by trying to make it a creative experience, an expression of my creativity, and find how many ways I can make this, write about this topic such that other people can understand, and I picture people reading it and getting value out of it, and, you know, just doing stuff like that. And I even, you know, like, find little things to do to reward myself. Like, you know, after every page, I will go check the tennis website.
Well, I knew tennis was coming into this again somewhere.
But no, I find little ways to reward myself, and that really helps, you know, just for a short, you know, little bits of accomplishment throughout the whole process.
I shouldn't laugh, because actually I was checking the baseball scores today.
You still love baseball then?
Yeah. I still follow the evil empire. Wow. Long may they reign.
Yes, but tennis is the game of the gods and goddesses.
I don't even know the names of the tennis gods anymore. So we won't go there. Wow. Is Federer still a god?
Yes, Federer is still there. He's declining now, but he's still in the top 10.
Okay, all right. Well, then all's right with the world.
All's still right with the world. Yes.
But the thing that I found happened more than anything else was, like you said, creativity. Mm-hmm. It was about trying to create processes that would actually make the next stage of the job go faster.
Okay. That's a great thing to do.
Which is a lot of work.
Yeah.
And in the past, very often I put that off because, well, it's a lot of work.
Right.
But the interesting thing is when you decide to go at it with the point of view, I want to find a way to enjoy this, mm-hmm. I can actually convince myself that I'd enjoy it if this job would go a whole lot faster.
But you know, the thing, that's a testament to the power of our minds, you know.
It is.
Because if we are determined to like something that we previously didn't like, if we're like, you know, if somebody said, I'm going to give you $1 million to like this, like really like it, I bet you would find a way to like it.
They make television reality shows based on that, you know.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Eating worms and stuff like that.
If you were being paid enough, you would actually find the joy in it. And so you just have to kind of do that. You know, our minds are powerful, like I said. And, you know, if we give our mind a task, it's going to do whatever it can to actually accomplish that task. Mm. And you will be surprised.
It reminds me of most kids growing up, that when you start out in life, you start out with a limited diet and a limited palate, and you don't like most foods.
Yes.
And then you learn to expand as you get older and older, hopefully. And what you're doing is you're doing exactly what we're saying. We're learning to like things that we didn't like before, and appreciating things we hadn't appreciated about them before, until it's like, you know what? why didn't I like this before? Exactly. This is really good.
Of course, it can have something to do with the skill, cooking skill level of your mother. But other than that, yes, I found a number of foods later on that I didn't like early on because they were prepared well. And I also learned how to prepare them, which made an even bigger difference.
Yes, Mark had that experience with collard greens.
Right.
collard greens, yes.
Yeah. Yes. The secret I learned from Ioana is tomatoes. You add tomatoes or tomato sauce to it, and it does something to the acid, bitter, something or other. I don't know what it is.
Well, the greens of the acid, I mean, the base of the greens and the acid of the tomatoes combine to give you.
Is that it? Okay. And it tastes fabulous. It tastes
wonderful. They neutralize each other, huh? Yeah.
Yes. And you get a really interesting taste.
Interesting. Yeah. This is really a side note. And Ioana, you probably already knew this. But did you know that most spices are not acids?
Right. Yes, I knew that.
Hmm. They're bases?
I mean, they're bases, and they're very strong bases.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So when you have acid indigestion, what you really have is base indigestion.
If it's based on eating a lot of spices.
Exactly, well, yes.
That's true, yeah. Because you can have acid indigestion from acid, but it's a whole different story.
Yeah. But it's also why an antacid doesn't always work.
Yes, that's true. Mm. It may not be the solution.
Wow.
But we digress.
Yes, we could do a whole show on health based on Ioana's research.
We've done that before, actually. Well, listen, we only have about 2 minutes left anyway, so it's probably a good time to sum up. I'm not sure how to sum up what we've come up with today, other than it is possible to feel good and enjoy something that you have not previously enjoyed that you do regularly for your work.
Yes, I want to share. I just kind of Googled that topic, the topic we're supposedly discussing, and came up with some suggestions that I found online, and the listeners might find this helpful.
Okay.
One says try to find and focus on what you do like about your work and ramp it up, you know, find more ways to do that aspect of it. The other says find a positive image to inspire you and help you cope with the job. Another says, learn something new about your work. You know, read a new book or on a topic or attend a conference, meeting, seminar. Pretend that you're new to the job, basically, and you want to learn some aspect about it that you didn't know. And that goes along with the next one, which says, approach your work from a beginner's mindset. And it talks about other things specific to job. You know, find a way to mentor others so that, you know, you're teaching what you do know. And you can ask someone, I guess your supervisor or someone in charge, how can you nurture your passion, whatever it is you might be passionate about that may be outside of your job task, that you could find a way to actually nurture that. So,
those are good. I think I would only add, if you can find a way to do it, invent something new in your job.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Mm. That's a great suggestion, yes.
So on that note, Mark, Ioana, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for doing this topic with me. Probably one of the more challenging ones we've had.
But we had so much fun.
We did have fun. And that's ultimately what it's about, because the better you feel, the better you feel.
Yeah.
And on that note, we hope you all will join us next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
It might seem crazy what I'm about to say.